The mission is simple, to help high achievers naturally eliminate emotional and physical obstacles so they can optimize their life for higher achievement. Welcome. You have just entered the Genesis Zone.
Good day, good day, good day, and welcome to the Genesis Zone show. This is Dr. Brian Brown. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join us on the show. Since my last update, there have been several important studies released regarding psilocybin. So today's show is all about the psilocybin update on the latest data, the latest research studies that have been published since we last did an update. And it's been a while since I did an update. Information has trickled out fairly slowly this year, but it's starting to come out really rapidly now. And I want to start going over that information with you. I am going to do some things because I'm going to break this up into multiple parts because there's some really critical information, and I'll explain that here in just a minute, that I don't want to get drowned out by some of the less powerful information, if you will. And when we talk about studies, we're talking about power of studies. The one I'm leading off with today is an exceptionally powerful study. And I think you'll see why here in just a minute. So this first study we're going to discuss in today's episode was published in the journal Nature Medicine by Dr. Richard Dawes and colleagues. Now, you've probably heard me say this before, but I'm going to say it again. Getting published as a researcher in Nature Journal is exceptionally difficult. It's the creme de la creme of medical journals. So when you see a study, when you see an author published in Nature Journal, you need to pay attention to it. Now, I personally believe that this particular study that we're going to talk about today will be a benchmark study by which other studies will be compared in the future because it was so well designed and because it also has a prominence and some prestige of being published in Nature Journal. Now, what's so special about this study? Well, let's talk about that. The study actually consisted of two different phases. Now, in phase one, they brought the study participants in and they did functional MRI imaging, a very detailed, almost like a PET scan type of image on the brain with nothing in their system. And then they gave them a 25 milligram dose of psilocybin, which is an extremely low dose. It's what we consider the micro dosing range of psilocybin. They give them a 25 milligram dose of psilocybin, brought them back the next day and repeated the functional MRI imaging. So that was phase one. And phase two, study participants were blindly randomized into one of two groups. They were either randomized into the psilocybin arm of the study, or they were randomized into the escitalopram or Lexapro arm of the study. Now, here's how that was set up. And I know you think these details are boring, but they mean something. They're very significant in the way they set this up. So the patients that were in the psilocybin arm were given 25 milligrams of psilocybin again in two different doses, 3 weeks apart. Plus, they were also given 6 weeks worth of placebo. They didn't know whether they were taking an antidepressant. They didn't know whether they were taking escitalopram. For that matter, they didn't even know they were taking psilocybin, to be quite honest with you. Well, that was the first arm of the study. In the second arm of the study, the second group that people were randomized into blindly, the researchers didn't even know what group people were in until after the study, was the study group that received psilocybin 1 milligram, which is kind of a colloquial phrase to put it, is a spit in the wind. A 1 milligram dose doesn't really do much when it comes to psilocybin. We need to be up in that 25 milligram range, to be quite honest with you. So a 1 milligram dose of psilocybin really doesn't do anything. But again, they received a 1 milligram dose two times, 3 weeks apart. Plus, they received 6 weeks worth of daily escitalopram, and it was titrated to effect either 10 or 20 milligrams. Okay. So here's what Dr. Dawes and his colleagues found. And I'm going to quote this because I think it's critically important to hear the technicality of it, but to start understanding it. I'm going to break this down, so don't get lost in the technical aspect of this. Now, this is Dr. Dawes quoting. In both trials, the antidepressant response to psilocybin was rapid, sustained, and correlated with decreases in functional MRI brain network modularity, implying that psilocybin's antidepressant action may depend on a global increase in brain network integration. Now, network cartography is a fancy word for mapping. Network mapping analysis indicated that 5-HT2A receptors, which is a serotonin receptor, 5-HT2A receptor-rich high-order functional networks became more functionally interconnected and flexible after psilocybin treatment. Now, the antidepressant response to escitalopram was milder and no changes in brain network organization were observed on functional MRI, end quote. Now, what does all this technical mumbo jumbo mean to the average everyday person? And why does it even matter when it comes to your brain health? It matters. It matters significantly. Let me explain. Firstly, if you recall from a podcast episode that I did last February, also a psilocybin update episode, I discussed how Big Pharma and a Big Pharma-backed study tried to show that psilocybin had literally no effect in a head-to-head study with escitalopram. And I went into detail, and you can go back and listen to that episode, but I went into great detail in explaining how that study was flawed and it never should have been published. It never should have been allowed to be published. And in fact, if you'll go back and notice, it was not published in Nature Journal. It never would have made it because it was so poorly designed. Now, this study is truly the one that we're talking about today. This study is truly something that a health professional can sink their chops into and use as support for prescribing psilocybin in the future when psilocybin does become legalized, as it's already becoming legalized in some states across the United States. Anyway, back to the interpretation of Dr. Dawes' statements above. Here's what all that means. Number one, the antidepressant response with just two doses of psilocybin 3 weeks apart was rapid and sustained. That's unheard of. We don't see that in the antidepressant world at all. You have to take it at least once a day. There are some antidepressants that have to be taken multiple times per day. You just don't see this kind of effect. And number two, the functional MRI or those high resolution MRI images showed that neuroplasticity was in play. Now, if you don't know what neuroplasticity means, it only means this: the ability for the brain to change in structure or function in response to an experience. So neuroplasticity is our brain's ability to change. Think of a child. A child has an amazing amount of high neuroplasticity in the brain. The brain's constantly evolving. It's constantly laying down new nerve and neuronal pathways in the brain. And it's just constantly evolving. We used to think that neuroplasticity went away in our early adult years, and you just didn't recapture that. We now know that's not true. Neuroplasticity is an ongoing thing. Does it slow down with aging? Yes, it slows down with aging. But here's why psilocybin is important. And I believe we're going to see use of psilocybin in the future outside of strict mental health standards for treatment-resistant depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the list goes on and on. I think we're going to see it for the aging brain because it does increase neuroplasticity. All right, all that being said, number three, and the final point I want to make about this study, it's really important, is that psilocybin appears to disintegrate old brain patterns, and disintegrate has a hyphen between the dis and the integrate. Okay. Don't think of it as disintegration as like it's falling apart right before my very eyes. No. We're talking about dis integration. So psilocybin appears to affect this disintegration of old brain pattern networks. Now, let me explain this last piece a bit more, because this last piece is ultimately one of the most exciting pieces of the study. And it relates back to not only mental health treatment, but also relates back to aging brain treatment and increasing neuroplasticity. Now, I recall when I was a kid, playing in the backyard, having fun. I love to play in the dirt. I love to get dirt under my fingernails. And it was just all ground into my hands. I mean, I looked horrible as a kid because I was always playing in the dirt, and I loved making mud pies. Okay. Now, for those of you listening, who had childhoods growing up through the 70s or 80s, you probably understand what I'm talking about. Those kids that grew up through the 90s, I'm not saying born in the 90s, but your childhood was in the bulk of the 90s. You may not be able to relate. And definitely if you were born in 2000 and beyond, you definitely can't relate, because kids just don't play in the dirt anymore. I don't understand it. I mean, we're a hand sanitizer generation. What can I say? I think our immune systems were stronger because we did play in the dirt. And I think there's a lot of evidence to that anyway. But anyway, I digress back to the subject. When I would build dirt mounds, playing in the dirt, one of my favorite things to do was to take a bucket of water, as big of a bucket of water as I could carry at that small age. And I would stand very still over the top of the peak of that mound, and I would pour the water slowly at the very tip top peak of that mound of dirt. Now, for anyone that's ever done this, played in the dirt, used water, playing with dirt, you know what happens. Once the dirt mound gets saturated with water, little bitty rivers or streams of water begin to form going downhill on the sides of the mound. And those rivers begin to cut trenches in that dirt, right? Okay. Well, the same thing happens in your brain when you're dealing with anxiety, you're dealing with depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, ADHD, bipolar disorder, the list goes on and on and on. The same thing happens in your brain. Now, your brain gets so used to functioning in these trenches and these dysfunctional patterns that it literally can't get out of those ruts. So the thought pattern immediately, automatically follows that trench. Because if you were to leave that, going back to our dirt mound analogy, if you were to leave it alone, let it dry out, and then come back and pour water on the tip top, you don't even need to saturate the dirt anymore. The water's automatically going to follow those trenches. And that's what happens over time in our brain. These trenches get cut deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Now, we call this this response that the neurotransmitters go through, we call this entrenched neurotransmitter responses. Okay. It just makes sense. That's an entrenchment of your nerve pathways. Okay. Well, as it turns out, psilocybin in this study, as proven by the functional MRI images, as high resolution resolution images, was found to untrench those dysfunctional brain pattern pathways. In other words, the old integrated dysfunctional patterns were disintegrated, meaning they were smoothed over. They were rewritten. It was like we said, we're going to start with a new mound of dirt. We're going to fill in these trenches. We're going to pack them tight and smooth everything over so that we can develop new pathways. Now, think of it. I've always taught patients this, taught clients this. Think of this process that I've just described to you as a virtual facelift for the brain. Now, psilocybin helps get rid of the bad wrinkles in your brain and your thinking patterns, and those neurological pathways, and it gets rid of those wrinkles or trenches in this particular case. Now, this is very exciting. In fact, brain researchers have looked for something to do exactly what they found in this study: reverse that entrenchment, disintegrate those bad nerve pathways, those entrenched nerve pathways. They've been looking for this. In fact, one might say it's the holy grail of brain research. And they've not been able to really make much headway in this area until psilocybin hit the research world and people started understanding, oh my gosh, we're seeing on functional MRI that low doses of psilocybin in the non-hallucinogenic realm, low doses of psilocybin are actually rewriting brain pathways in a positive way and relieving depression, relieving anxiety, treating post-traumatic stress disorder forever, like totally getting rid of it, helping attention deficit, hyperactive people, adults with their ADHD. And guess what? Mother Nature had it figured out all along. I think the most frustrating thing is that psilocybin has been criminalized. And if you go back and look at the history of how psilocybin was criminalized, it was back in the days in the late 70s, early 80s, where they had discovered LSD, PCP. They were having issues with it on the streets. And they knew that psilocybin was out there, and they lumped it into that same category. So when they outlawed or criminalized LSD and PCP, they actually criminalized psilocybin as well. And psilocybin really doesn't have that same history. It's a plant-based product. It's all natural. And it's very beneficial in the right doses with the right supervision, so on and so forth. So I think the decriminalization of psilocybin that we're seeing starting to catch hold across the United States is critically important. It's critically important for people who struggle with depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, bipolar disorder. And I'm going to talk about a study in one of the upcoming episodes as I'm walking through this multi-part series on psilocybin update that specifically talks about bipolar disorder and psilocybin. Because previously, I mean, psilocybin was thought to be contraindicated, meaning you would not give it to a bipolar patient. And now we're starting to see the opposite. We're actually starting to see bipolar patients who've been given psilocybin in controlled settings. They're actually doing very well with it. But we'll talk about some of the data that's out there and has come out since our last update related to that here in a future episode. But right now, I think the best thing that we can do is start educating ourselves, because the day will come when I believe psilocybin will be decriminalized nationwide. Here's why I believe that. There are current studies going on with synthetic psilocybin. Okay. Now, does it mean that regular psilocybin, the non-synthetic plant-based version, will be legal? No. I just believe that certain municipalities are going to start to decriminalize it, meaning they don't see an issue with it and they don't have a problem with it being prescribed or used in certain patient populations. Oregon is probably one of the pioneering states in this right now. And they are doing a bang up job in using it clinically. I do think it needs to expand, but I also hold out hope and I'm pretty confident that it will continue to expand as we get more research and more data out. Because if the big pharma companies who are going to make the synthetic psilocybin, they're not going to want natural psilocybin on the market. But I think municipalities, I think people in these municipalities, in these cities are smart enough to see it for what it is. And I think they're going to start demanding of their local boards, their legislators, to say, listen, we need to decriminalize this. Yes, it may be illegal and on a federal level, but we need to decriminalize this because it's that important. And I think what you're going to see, I think you're going to see when that happens, you're going to see more people using it for appropriate things, and you're going to see a lot less mental illness across the United States. I just know it. I've seen it in clients who actually use psilocybin in microdoses that their long-term 30, 40, 50-year experience with the mental health care system and treatment, it gets better and better and better to the point where they don't have to take the multiple drug regimen, the multi-drug regimen that they're using from big pharma type sources. They just don't have to do it anymore. Is it a miracle drug? No, I don't think there is such a thing. Is it a total lifestyle approach? It is a total lifestyle approach. It's changing the way you eat, changing your sleep patterns, changing your exercise patterns. It's a global thing. But when you can incorporate this natural treatment remedy, just something as simple as psilocybin into your regimen and do it correctly at the correct doses for the correct length of time, everything else seems to fall into place. And now we know why that happens. And we're starting to understand the mechanics behind psilocybin. And that's what this study was about. Seeing these functional MRI results was critical and very important for us to have the data to understand that psilocybin is literally changing brain patterns in a positive way. Therapists know, psychologists know, that when you have a person in therapy, you can rewrite brain neural pathways to a degree. There's no medication that does it, that's big pharma generated, but therapy over long term, and I'm talking about decades, can reroute and change for the positive neural pathways. There are some therapy modalities that will change neural pathways for the negative. I don't want to get into that because it's very controversial. But one of them uses a semi-hypnotic state with either tap or eye movement, things like that. And there's actually some countries in Europe that have outlawed that technique because of the damage that it does in creating false neural pathways, false memories, and things like that. Again, a conversation for another day, but psilocybin is as close to the Holy Grail as we have when it comes to generating and improving and promoting neuroplasticity in the brain. And the effects that that has on mental health as well as aging are astounding. And we're going to see that more and more as we move forward. Month by month, we're seeing more studies come out. And studies like this will actually just spurn more studies to go deeper and understand at a deeper level how long this lasts. Is it permanent? Is it temporary? What are we seeing over the long term? And I would imagine these scientists are already gearing up to follow these people, these participants in this study over a long period of time, or create a new study where they actually follow people over a long period of time, because that's going to be the next step in this Holy Grail type of movement that we're seeing with psilocybin. That's all I've got for today. If you're curious to know more about just functional medicine, functional health of your brain in any kind of way, if there's any question I can answer, please feel free to message me at Dr. Brian G. Brown on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram, on LinkedIn. That's my handle, @ Dr. Brian G. Brown. Reach out to me. I'll be glad to answer any question that you might have. Most informed, most trusted, and most grateful you spent this time with us today. Until next time, stay in the zone. I'm Dr. Brian Brown.